All right, we have much to do again. I don't know about you, but my brain just doesn't work this fast. It's my workshop. Let me just talk about the handouts that you're now receiving. Is there a spare one for me? Thank you. I think you've discovered that I do get there in the end, but it does take me a while. So if you feel at all slow like me, then you may be encouraged that you will get there. And more as I get feedback from you, and it is the feedback that's important. I'm going to be really honest with you. Quite a while ago, I thought of what I was doing, working with the inner circle. I thought, well, this is quite hard work. Is there an easier, cushy way to make a living? You know, is there where I can just sit back and let it all roll into my bank account? And of course, the idea came to me, well, I could do stuff online, couldn't I? I could create something online, just sit there and watch my bank account roll up. Or as my daughter would say, yeah, right. And I realised the wonder of, well, there's a number of things that's really exciting about working with the inner circle, because there is already an outer circle that is about to launch, is that, number one, it's a great experience emotionally and spiritually, working with people very, very intensely and very close. And it is quite intense, the relationship that we have, with some of you more intense than others. But also, I find out so much about things that I thought I knew, and I don't really know at all. I just thought I knew it. And one of the dangers in running any business is what you think you know, and then you try and defend it. You think you know something and you defend it, and people unsettle you by introducing new thoughts to you that you don't like because you thought you knew differently. And one of the beauties about my role, one of the very selfish things, is that I keep getting knocked back by things I thought I knew, and you teach me I don't know it that well at all, or I really don't know it, and I have to go and find out. One of the things that I've always thought I knew was all about niche marketing. And more as you look at me with blank stares, or you look all frustrated and annoyed with you and really it's with me, or I just don't get this, or whatever it is, maybe your reaction, I begin to understand maybe there's a link there that some are just not getting about finding your own niche. And I began to realise teaching you to find a niche for yourself is an inappropriate way of expressing it. So, some of you have said, David, how do I find my niche market, my target market? Okay, how many of you have sort of signaled that to me during the last year or so? How do I find? Yes. And then I reacted, I said, well, this is how you do it. I draw graphics for you and I talk about four segments and demographics, and all of that is right. But more and more I began to realise there's something missing here that I'm just not communicating. So it's not you, it's me. So have a look at this handout, what I started to put together. Have a look at the niche test. Now, be very careful here because this is fairly general, this handout. It's not just designed for financial planners, so we have to think slightly differently. But it's a guideline. I want someone to read this for me. Stephen, you've got a very crisp voice. Could you read that which is in black at the top of the niche test page?
Yes, certainly.
It's quite a bit of it, so read nice and clearly for us. Can you read that? Is it?
Sorry, it's just not printed brilliantly, this one.
Is it bad printing?
The niche test.
Yes.
The niche test. Good niches start with emotional needs that people are having, which are then used as the inspiration to create great products and services to solve them. Use my niche test to filter each of your niche ideas and discover which ones are worth pursuing and testing. This test is simple, but it can save you an amazing amount of wasted time and money. Here's how to use it. Ask the four questions below when considering a niche.
Good English.
If you get four yes answers, then you've got a good niche idea, and you should test it. If you don't get four yes answers, then keep tweaking your niche idea until you do.
Yeah, I just want you to, this is completely off-piste, okay? It just came to me yesterday because of the questions you keep asking me, and I'm saying, why doesn't he just get it? And that's because I'm just not teaching it appropriately. So I want you to spend no more than 4 minutes seeing how quickly you can answer questions 1, 2, 3, and 4. And I'm saying 4 minutes because if you're struggling, it means that I need to talk to you. We need to spend time together.
There is that assumption that we do have a niche.
Sorry?
Well, not
no, what this is saying is, yeah, that's a really good point. Actually, can I just pick up on Paul's point? Paul is saying, supposing I either don't have a niche or I actually don't want a niche, which is a question behind the question. What this is saying is, look, I'm going to be really a bit blunt here, almost a bit rude.
On that, because I didn't say I didn't want one. I just said I didn't think we'd identify one, because we've got anyone with over 100,000 as our niche.
Fine, okay. And that's part of niching, but that's not what this is saying at all. I don't know about you, but I don't have an awful lot of time to live. There's nothing wrong with me, I feel quite healthy. But, you know, it's not that long in the overall scheme of things, is it? I mean, it's a couple of decades and a bit more. Not a lot of time left to waste. Most of you are a bit younger than me, but I, in all honesty, you don't have a lot of time to waste either. Okay? Is there something David knows that we don't know? Not to waste anyway. Life is pretty precious. And I think part of my responsibility is to show you if there's a way to shortcut the time you're going to spend to get to your outcomes, not my outcomes, your outcomes, your objectives in life, then I'd better find a way to show you. One of the ways I've realised more and more as you keep questioning me and staring at me and thinking, what is he talking about? Or, David, I can't find my niche, is if I can just help you find out the answers to these questions, wherever it is you're going, you'll almost certainly get there faster. That's the purpose of today's conversation. Wherever it is you want to go, whatever your outcome, I seriously believe that if you can just get these questions into your head and find your own answers, you will get wherever you want to go faster. So have a look at the four questions and see how quickly you can answer them. Obviously, question one is yes is not the answer, okay? Yes, of course they have a problem. The question really is, do you know what the heck it is? So yes or no is not sufficient an answer to show that you understand what the question's asking you.
You've got to think of a scenario, basically, to see whether that niche is working. So
if your answer to question one is yes, of course they do, well, what is it? And it doesn't necessarily have to be something that immediately you can answer. It doesn't have to be. You just need to be aware of what it is. Does your business prospect or your personal consumer prospect, prospective client or existing client, have a need that's urgent and painful that needs to be dealt with? It's possible you can't deal with it. It's possible. But first of all, you need to define what it is.
David, the reference to 1 in 1,000, is that 1 in 1,000 within your niche, or is that 1,000
Yes, niche? Yes. Let's say you have a niche of 40,000, and that's all you've got, then are you sure at least 1 in 1,000? And the answer generally is yes, of course they do. For example, if the answer to question three is actually the problem in my niche, which may be people with £100,000 living within 25-mile radius of whatever, okay, is they have loads of options to go to. Well, you've got a problem.
I've got a problem with question one.
You don't know what.
The niche I'm talking about. So yeah. Really, what you're saying is then I need to re-identify my niche, don't I?
Yeah,
because some of 100,000 is probably not experiencing pain earnestly or an irrational question.
Yeah, if I've got 100,000, you've got to find out what my real problems are, because otherwise, how are you going to get me to come to you with a desperate need for you? I'm not saying this is immediately solvable. I mean, if you can't answer yes to these, then you're going to struggle. Okay, and stop. All I've done today is I've just raised a question. The question is this: if you are looking for a niche, then the question you're asking is the wrong question. Should I work with dentists is not the question. The question is there somebody out there that has a significant problem that you think you can help deal with? First of all, do you know what that serious, significant, painful, urgent problem is? Have you identified it? In all of the things we've discussed ever since we met, the first question is, do you know what my problem is? Not, what have you got to offer, but do you know what my problem is? And if you can't identify the problem, you're going to spend years wasting your life trying to sell your services to people with £100,000. Years. You will waste years of your life trying to push that. You can define a market out there with serious problems which you can help. So, for example, what did James Cheetham do? He said, I know there's a bunch of guys out there that I keep bumping into because one or two of them are my clients, and they are stressed out of their brains and they have the second highest suicide rate in the country. Why is that, and can I do anything about it? Well, I can't sit with them at work and help them sort out their patient problems, but I can sure as eggs are eggs, help them sort out their financial life at home and their financial life to do with their various finances they get within their role, and help them just get it sorted so that they know, I don't have to do this forever. I can actually walk away from this second highest suicide rate job in the country. And I have to tell you, when you talk to NHS people now, as opposed to 15 years ago, they're exhausted. They want out. Because the NHS is killing them. Our expectation of what they need to deliver to us because of our taxes has gone through the roof. And it's killing them. And they want out. And the reason why I know that is because James knows it and he tells me. So he helps them to find the out. Does that make sense? That's a painful, urgent, desperate problem needing a solution. What Andy McLaughlin said to me was, these small business owners I keep meeting hate the levels of tax that they get stumped for. They just get angry about it. It is annoying, it is painful, it is urgent, and they want it solved now. Right now. Not sometime down the road when you fancy planning their pension scheme for them, but now, today. So then that's the problem I'm going to start addressing first in the niche. Does that make sense? So I'm not looking for a niche. The niche has to be... Okay, here's the difference. This is a lot of time off piece, but you don't go and find your niche. You uncover it. It's already there, sitting right in front of your nose, and your job is to uncover it and peel back the layers. And you do it by sitting down in your office quietly outside this workshop and sitting with your team and asking these questions until you get four yeses. And I'm almost guarantee you will not get four yeses straight away. So you then have to find a way, how can I get to a situation where I'm aiming for a group of people where I can say yes, 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 yes. And then what do I do about it? I can see your just brows are creasing and your eyes are crossing and thinking. But can you see the sheer emotional and psychological logic of this? Why push something which they're not urgently in need of? First find the urgent need and the painful problem, and then, as Peter says, when you communicate, you stick your finger in the wound and pour salt in it. That's horrible, isn't it? But we'll show you how to do that in just a second. Does that make sense as an exercise to do back at the office? If you avoid that exercise back at the office, I promise you, you will waste years of your life getting the numbers you want into your business to pay, to receive the outcomes that you want in your life. Years. Okay, I'm going to jump now a few pages. I'm going to go on to page 27. Okay, we have just 25 minutes. I'm going to teach you some copywriting. Have a look at the third bullet point down and tell me what we're trying to say there. Third bullet point down on page 27. Incidentally, what is copywriting? What does that mean? Fred, what does copywriting mean?
Basically, copy that you have written.
Yeah, and when you say copy, what does that mean?
That's something that's cut. Something that's come from you and New England.
Okay.
Did you want to protect?
You want to add to that? What do I mean by copy?
Words.
Words.
Text.
Words. Just words. Words, what you write. Copy. As opposed to content. What's the difference between copy and content? Because you hear us talking all the time, Peter and I, about copy and content. What's the difference?
In the words, the story.
Meaning.
Information.
Okay, you want to expand?
Yeah, just the information or the story, the narrative within the copy.
Message.
Message. Okay, which is which? What's content and what's copy?
Content is message.
Content is?
Message.
Message, so what's copy?
It's the words that you've written.
Okay, Andy?
They're interchangeable, aren't they?
I'm going to say content is fact, whereas copy is how you deliver it. It's the style, it's the...
Yeah, could be. In practice, when you're writing copy and content, because you've got to do this stuff with help, you've got to create brochures, you've got to create websites, you've got to create business cards, leaflets, all of this stuff. It's all got to come from you. Is content is delivering information. Copy is the way you word things so that they actually start taking action on the information. Yeah, copy is used by copywriters to get you to take action. And the cleverest copywriters get you to take action to the tunes of many millions of pounds.
So it's like the call to action. It's a copy.
Yeah, the copy leads you to the eventual call to action. It's how you write all the stuff in between that gets a person to take action. How long should a letter that gets you to take action be?
Two paragraphs.
In addition to two paragraphs?
Three
paragraphs. Very good. Copy to get your clients to actually get off their backsides and do something can be as long as needed to get off their backsides and do something. Who used to receive Reader's Digest sales letters to get you to do whatever to go into the pot for 13 million quid? Yeah. Typically, how long were they?
Very long.
Define very.
So they're out of business now.
Yes, they are. Yeah. Recession put them out of business. Yeah, typically they were anything between 4 and 10 pages long. Some of the best copywriting letters to take action and get you to make buying decisions in the world have been more than about half a dozen to 10 pages. So forget all this nonsense that you learnt at sales training about one-page letters. It's rubbish. If you can get it done in three paragraphs, do it in three paragraphs. But if it takes you 10 pages to tell the story to get them to take action on your terms at your price, then it's 10 pages, as long as it takes. But we'll go into more detail in a second. Go back to 27. When we first started sales training, we learnt about this, and we learnt there's something better than that. What was the thing we learnt was better than that?
Benefits.
Yes. Okay. And now we learn even that isn't sufficient. What is it we really want?
Outcomes.
Outcomes. I want more than benefits in my life. I want an eventual result. I'm not hiring you for your financial planning service. I actually don't care about your financial planning service. If I could stop your financial planning service happening and still get the same results, that's what I do. If I would not have to fill in your silly questionnaires and read your 25-page reports and all this other malarkey that I have to go through to get the results, I just banish a lot of it. I just want the results. That's what I really... I mean, I love the relationship. Love it. And the fascinating way you life plan with me and all that stuff. I just want the results. That all of that will help me get in my life. It's the outcomes. So your copy should point out that when you work with us, let me explain to you the outcomes in your life. Yeah? Copy should include that. What do I mean by alienate your non-clients, Andy? Alienate your non-clients.
People you don't want as clients, you want to switch up and go away straight away rather than get on the phone and bug you.
And how do you do that? How do I alienate people?
You set bars, you set hurdles to jump over, and if you can't jump over those hurdles, then...
Yeah. And Peter called them, what did Peter call them this morning? Beginning with F.
Filtering,
yeah. In other words, be very clear about your product. See, one of the reasons why I'm really hard on you when you start to describe your service is because it feels too woolly. It's not crisp, clear and consistent and simple. The simpler and clearer you get it, which is quite scary, the more it scares some people away, which is exactly what you want. You only want 100 plus people paying the right fees, and that's enough for any business. So get rid of those people that are just outside of your scope, which means you have to be really clear about your service, your product. Really crystal clear. Got me two already. Hello, did you want this? No? Okay. It's a mouse. And remember we're going to talk about copy for the website, and Peter said, be clear, define your most wanted objective. So who here on their website has a newsletter sign-up facility? Anybody have that? Okay, Eric, Paul, anybody else? Okay. What other objectives could there be on a website? What might you want them to do, John?
Get in touch,
call me now. What other objectives might you want?
Not to get in touch.
yes. Actually, we laugh, but in some of my adverts for the workshop I say, if you're anything like this, please do not call me. And only half the people who apply get to the workshop, and some really high earners apply, and I say no for all sorts of reasons. So I'm very clear about my objectives. Okay, turn page.
By the way, on that call to action, if you were to precede the call me now with if you have more than £500,000 of investments, pensions and other savings, call us now on 123456. And immediately, you've alienated your less than £500,000. So you can incorporate this filtering into your call to action.
Yeah. And you need to be brave enough to do that. What happens when you filter out some people? What happens to the other people?
Feel special.
Yeah, they do feel more special. You know, if you can't afford the Ferrari, don't call us. If you have to ask the price for the Rolls, sir, milady, this is not the car for you. Yes, that kind of, it's that kind of a reaction. Turn to page 28. We're still on writing copy for the web. What am I banging home here that I've really spent much of today banging on about? And concerning the copy on your website. What's this all about, page 28? What's the underlying theme here? Howard.
about making the client realise that you've got the answer to his problem.
Yeah, by doing what first on the web, on the website?
Asking the right questions.
Asking the right question?
Stating his problem better than he can.
Yeah. So, using Peter's jargon, which is called, you call it above the fold. What would Peter mean by, on the website, above the fold? What do you think that means? Above the fold.
So you open the book, it's, I never got
the book. It's taken from newspaper terminology, but used on the web.
So imagine a newspaper. Go on.
First up on the website.
Yeah. When you first look at a website, don't make them scroll down for the important bit. Does that make sense? If the most important thing you have to say is there at the top of the page, don't make them scroll down. Don't go blah, 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 and the most important thing I ever have to say to you is down here somewhere, so please scroll down. Don't make them do that. Everything that you really want them to see first has to be above the fold, the most important thing. And what we're saying in this page is, look, define the problem above the fold. So what James would say is this, on his homepage, the problem with being a doctor today, is, that's how he starts his webpage, not, we're our financial planners of some 25 years standing and we still wear clogs today because, you know, it's just...
You feel like wearing your shoes.
That's right. You think you've got problems, we had no feet, you know. It's just crass. It's just ridiculous. It's a waste of really, really expensive space. I was talking to someone at lunchtime about a course that I'm on the internet, a guy called Eben Pagan. Goodness knows where he gets a name like that from. And this guy, I just hate this guy. I hate him so much, I love him. He appears on his little video. Hi, guys, and here's my balcony, and here's the beaches of wherever, Sacramento or whatever it is, and the next three towns are this, that, and the other. And how many people do you think live in the next three towns? And you go, oh, I don't know, tell me, Eben. And you're actually speaking to the video because you get that daft, you know. And he says, well, I'm glad you asked the question because there's about 230,000 people living in those three towns combined aggregate. He said, that's how many people signed up to my blog last year. And it makes me sick. And he said, so that's really great. So I'm now going to show you how to get that done in your business. Of course, you're just hanging with your tongue out like this. And he just gets you in the first few seconds. The problem with being in the whatever it is business, maybe financial planning business today, is this. And he just defines it right up. And then he just shoves it right down your throat saying, look at the answer here. Getting 230,000 people to sign up to my website. Guess how many clients I now have a choice from? I can be picky and choosy now. Wouldn't you love to do this? Of course I would, Eben. Would you like me to show you how to do this? Of course I would. You know, it's that kind of copy and video. Just the problem with being in your business today is this. But the problem, Howard, comes first. If I go to your website and I don't see the problem of the client defined, then you need to rethink your website. Okay? I don't give a hoot about your business. I don't care about financial planning. That's your problem. I care about me and my problems. I've been banging on about this for over 2 years now, and it's gradually getting through. But you're right, it takes a while, doesn't it? Till you finally get it. I don't care about your financial planning. Pensions make me sick. Who wants to buy insurance? Who wants to buy insurance? Actually, oh, whoopee-doo, darling. How are you? What a glorious morning. It's June and it's, let's go and buy some insurance. It's just, you know. Sometimes I think we get in our own little world and just get lost. This is the real world problems. Page 29. Okay. We've done this one before. I'm going to give you 5 minutes, no more. Okay? You take your existing clients, your main client base, the kind of people you deal with, and I want you to write as if you're writing for your website, the sort of copy which says, what you really want in life is this. And I want you to write it to four different types of people. People who love having lots of self-esteem, people who love being in control, people who love being belonging to part of a group, and people who want meaning in their life. I want you to write to them, okay, four different types of people who think differently about life. I want you to write to them. Write copy for your website as if you're trying to talk to them. And here's what you're trying to say. If you work with us, here's what will happen. You will continue.